Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our show today by taking a look at hospice care here in Wisconsin with a couple of guests. Beryl Bice is a registered nurse and has been a ministry hospice nurse for 5 years. Ministry hospice covers the Wausau-Stevens Point area. Also with us by phone, Doris Haynes Stadler, a social worker who's been with Ministry Hospice for 8 years. You know, November is National Home Health Hospice Month, helping to raise awareness for hospice, and we certainly wanted to be involved in it because I personally think hospice has done a lot of good, certainly did for my, has done for my family, and maybe for yours too, or maybe not, and you have some questions about it. You may have some experiences that you want to share or questions that you want to ask, and I hope you do. Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd be happy to have you along. Beryl Bice?
Good morning.
Hi, Doris Haynes.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being with us today. I really appreciate it. You know, I think there are some misunderstandings or maybe even some myths about health care and hospice care and what it entails. What exactly does hospice do, Beryl?
Hospice is a service that's provided to patients whose doctor determines that they have 6 months or less expected life expectancy. So this can be any age person whose doctor has determined that they likely have 6 months or less left of their life expectancy.
So 6 months or less. And as you say, it doesn't matter the age of the person, does it?
Correct. We serve patients of all ages, from infants, children. Primarily, though, the greatest portion of our service is provided to elderly patients.
Yeah, and it's certainly... That's what one would expect, but I'm sure there are times when there are young. I know there are times when there are very young people involved as well. What are all the services that are offered?
Well, hospice care is actually a package of services provided by an interdisciplinary team. So the services include nursing support, training, medications, equipment. Social worker support, chaplain services, home health aides, even volunteers are part of our team that provide service to the patient, preferably at their residence, wherever that might be.
Yeah.
Most often we serve people in their homes.
Yeah. And Doris Haynes Stadler, you've been involved. You're a social worker.
That's correct.
Talk about some of the social work aspects of this. I'm sure I know it's an important part.
Well, it's a combined team approach, but social work specifically is looking at does the patient and family have the resources within the community that they need to remain in their home. We also look at the emotional component of this as well and help families to cope with end-of-life issues and do a lot of teaching along with the nursing staff in preparing families to be caregivers at the end of life.
Yeah. And I assume that when at all possible, the patient gets to make some of the decisions during this process. Like, just as an example, my mother was not able to do that because she was an Alzheimer's patient.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases, I assume that the patient does have some possibility to make decisions.
Certainly. The patient is really the primary leader of the team. We're following the decisions that they want for their end-of-life journey. And hopefully we find that families will support what decisions that they're making. And sometimes it's an education process to get everybody, you know, on the same path. But yes, definitely the patient is the one who is leading the team.
How many people, do you know, Beryl, how many people are served by hospice care in a particular year?
We have the numbers from 2007, And it was 1.4 million patients that did receive hospice services in 2007.
Oh.
But it turns out that really is just less than 40% of all the deaths in the United States. So we still have quite a few people that we could be assisting at that phase of life.
So, and in Wisconsin, the numbers would be?
We don't have the Wisconsin numbers.
Oh, but so it's, I wanted to make sure that people understood it was 1.4 million
nationally, right.
All the way across the nation.
Right.
Well, Margie in Green, lots of people to visit with you here. So Margie in Green Bay is up first. Let's go there. Margie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that both my parents were clients of Unity Hospice out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the care they were given was wonderful, and the families included. And I don't know how we would have done it without the help of Unity. I really don't. And now I'm a volunteer with them. So it's anybody that's interested in helping out. It's just they have so many different volunteer areas, from clerical to patient care and stuff like that. So it's a wonderful, wonderful organization.
Oh, well, Margie, thank you for calling. I'm sure Beryl and Doris might both want to have a comment, but Beryl, we'll turn to you.
Well, I see it as the main focus of our care really is teaching families how to care for their loved ones, and that seems to be most often what we're doing in working with families. So obviously she had that experience.
Did. Our whole family did. In fact, my father was the one that requested Unity Hospice. None of us had heard of it. He died 9 years ago, and that's how I first got involved in it. But the help we needed, the equipment we needed to care for him, and yes, they did. They trained us to take care of our parents with their needs and stuff. It was wonderful. So I thank you so much.
And we're happy to have you being a volunteer now. Volunteers are an essential part of the hospice team. It's part of the mandated service that we provide. And so every hospice organization will have volunteers as part of their team that provide many different types of services to the patients and their families.
Thanks, Margie, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Deb in Eau Claire next. Deb, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just wanted to say that a couple of years ago when my dad was near the end of his life, we had hospice care. And the first organization we worked with for a few weeks, and we weren't comfortable with it. And so we changed to a different hospice and had a great experience. So people should know that, you know, you can shop around a little bit, and it was very easy. We just said we'd like to end this relationship, and they said, okay. So you're not locked into something, you know, that you might not, you know, think is for you. And then my dad had hospice care in a nursing home, and he was getting very good care, but it made it so much better. They have so many resources. They brought in, you know, their wound care specialists and their pain management specialists to support the nurses there, and it was just great. And especially the family, you know, the support that they gave to us and you know, with decisions that we had to make. Overall, it was just a wonderful experience.
Hmm. Thanks for calling. Doris Haynes-Staller, do you want to make a comment?
I sure would. Thanks for pointing those things out. Definitely, if families aren't comfortable with any hospice program, you certainly can change to an alternative program in your area. We happen to serve people in 29 counties in Wisconsin, so there's, you know, and there are programs, other hospice programs that overlap many of our areas. So, yes, people always have a choice in which program they receive service from. And the other point is that, yeah, we also provide service to the patients wherever they say home is. So if it's in a nursing home, we provide care along with the staff of that facility, as well as group homes in the communities or adult family homes, in addition to people's own private residences.
Yeah.
So,
Deb, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Valerie and Pine River, we'll give you a chance. Val, hello.
Hi. I am wanting to thank your guests and tell them how grateful I am for all the work they do.
because of our friends on the human hospice side, I was able to start a veterinary hospice service for end-of-life pets in their home. And my colleague and I did go to hospice training for humans and have mirrored the program much after that. And we've learned so much from all your guidance, and just wanted to thank you so much. And the word angel was very true. Once we finished our hospice training, we did feel that you were the angels of our society and look so much forward to providing that service for end-of-life pets. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for that call. Burl, Bice, a comment from you?
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea and program that she's developed. I had never heard of a hospice service for pets, but it sounds like a wonderful idea, and certainly the same principles would apply to caring for the patient and the family all together to help them through that process.
Thank you very much, Valerie, for calling. I want to go back, Burl, maybe we can go back to a caller earlier who said, well, things didn't go out quite the way they wanted with one hospice, so they went to another. Are there major differences among hospice units?
Well, the actual care that's provided by hospice is determined by Medicare regulations. So the same spectrum of services should be provided by any hospice organization. But hospice care is provided by numerous different healthcare agencies. So whatever local healthcare provider is in your area most likely would provide some hospice service. So thus, competing agencies or healthcare providers might have more than one service in any area.
Gotcha. Okay. Moses and Madison, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm actually involved up to my ears in spreading the word about hospice. I write a bi-monthly column in the Wisconsin Hospice Times, which is the newsletter of the Hope of Wisconsin. That's the statewide organization of hospices. And I'm rather astonished that there are still people who think that hospice is where you stay with your buddies when you go backpacking in Europe. I mean, there are some people who are really not sure what this is about. And the Hope of Wisconsin, along with Hospice Minnesota, got a grant from the Bremer Foundation, and we are in the process of putting together a toolkit for marketing hospices, which I am in the process of writing as we speak. And the toolkit is going to give hospices what they need in order to raise awareness about their services, to let people know that they're not going to go bankrupt by going to hospice care, because they're not going to have to pay out of pocket, by knowing all the services that hospices provide, asking the right questions. They're going to let hospices become better at getting referrals from referral sources at hospitals and nursing homes and whatnot. So that tool is going to be available free, actually, to all the members of the Hope of Wisconsin, all the hospices that belong, early next year. And I think it's really going to change the way our hospices reach people by using very well-established marketing tools.
Hmm. Doris, a comment for you, Doris Haynes-Stadler?
I think that's a fabulous idea. We certainly need to continue to get the word out and grow our services, especially in areas that still are underserved or not served at all by hospice programs. And Hope of Wisconsin is a great support for all of us. They do wonderful education and support of the hospice programs here in the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you, Moses, very much. Burl, did you want to make a comment as well? I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I do think that we can tell by that figure that says only 40% of deaths use hospice service that there still is plenty of room to expand our services and grow that awareness. I think it's a cultural thing that we don't talk about death or plan for it as much as possible, and just trying to get that awareness of what a hospice service is out there is an essential piece of making the best use of that resource.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to add that the help is on the way, and if any hospice out there wants more information about this, I encourage you to contact the Hope of Wisconsin. Melanie Ramey, who runs the place, just does a spectacular job, and she can get you in touch with me, and I can give you more information. But the awareness battle is going to be won, and it's going to be won in 2009 and 2010. It's about to be won.
Moses, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. So contact Hope of Wisconsin if you're in the hospice business, so to speak. I hate to call it a business. It doesn't seem quite right to call it a business, does it, Burl?
Well, we try to separate the business side out of it most of the time. There is always, you know, insurance and healthcare
sure.
issues that we're all challenged with right now.
Oh, absolutely. I understand that. Our guests today, Burl Bice, a registered nurse, and has been a ministry hospice nurse for 5 years. Ministry hospice covers the Wausau-Stevens Point area. Doris Haynes-Stadler is a social worker, has been with ministry hospice for 8 years. And we're really pleased to have them with us. Ruth and Ladysmith up next. But you can join in, too, with your questions. We finally have some open lines again. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Always interested in your questions or your experiences that you can share with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking hospice care with our two guests today, Burl Bice and Doris Haynes-Stadler. Larry Mueller here. Let's take some more calls. And Ruth in Ladysmith is up next. Ruth, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have one point. I think hospice is a really great program, and my father-in-law went through a hospice program, and it was very good for him. But here in Rusk County, I know of a situation where you really have to be careful if you're going to get hospice that, and your county is paying for something, or your person who is receiving the services is receiving a lot of other services. You know, not to get people's hopes up in case the county can't afford to do everything. Maybe it's just a very unique situation, but I know that it we couldn't continue the hospice because it was just costing too much.
Oh.
And that's okay, because the services that we're giving to this person are excellent. Anyway, it was like this was just the gravy, you know, but at $175 a day, it was a little steep. But I think for people who are at home, you know, trying to stay at home or in some other situation, it's probably great. It's good to check with your county to make sure that it's going to be fine.
I appreciate the call. So it's an eligibility question. And Burl, what about eligibility?
Well, hospice care is a covered benefit under Medicare. So always any person with Medicare coverage is covered, and hospice care would be available to them. Medicare does pay 100% of our billing for that care, so there is no cost to the patient if they have Medicare. Also, in the state of Wisconsin, Medicaid covers it, so I'm not sure what her exact situation was. Most often, that is not a barrier to receiving hospice care.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ruth, for calling. Nancy in Bailey's Harbor, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Larry. I have two things I wanted to mention. One was, and I've had two experiences with hospice, and the most recent was my mother in Waukesha County. And what the social worker for hospice did for our family was just phenomenal. There were things that we did not know about our family history that social worker was able to get from my mother, who was dying from bone cancer. But the other thing I wanted to mention was a book, and I'm afraid I don't remember the author, but called Final Gifts. And Final Gifts is anecdotal stories of hospice workers, and both what the caregiver and the person receiving the care, the gift that they give each other.
Let me turn to Doris Haynes-Stadler. Doris, are you familiar with the book or have a comment?
I am familiar with the book, and it's a great resource for not only hospice employees, but also for families. It really is a helpful tool. And thank you for sharing your story about the benefit of having social workers on board. We always hope that we can add support both for the patient and the family and help to make it a good experience.
Well, that hospice worker, social worker gave us information that was like the missing link in our heritage, and it was much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for your story.
Thanks a lot for calling. Leslie in Preston, Minnesota, we turn to you now. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to call and say a little bit about our experience. We were the type of family that really didn't talk too much about what we were going to do and never really had to face it before. And then when my father-in-law got sick, all we knew for sure was that he did not want to go to a nursing home ever. So we knew he wanted to be at home as much as possible. So when hospice became involved, we were just blown away at how comfortable they made us feel in letting us take care of him and helping us take care of him, where as he progressed and he needed different, like, say, from a walker to a hospital bed to a, you know, the things for the bathroom, the special things in the bathroom, they just kept bringing us stuff and taking the other stuff away, and it was all, like, top-notch items, you know, they looked brand new. And they came in and set up the hospital bed and were just so, put their arms around you and just any questions you had. And then the nurses were awesome and explained everything, where we gave the medications that they told us to give him and helped him step by step. They told us the process that it would take to die. And boy, after going through that, it just took the fear out of death away from me so amazingly. It was a beautiful experience to be able to be at home and help him through his wish to die at home.
Well, Burl, a comment from you? Thank you so much for that, for your call, Leslie. Burl, comment?
Well, her story is just an example of the kind of work that we try to do with everyone, really teaching people how to care for their loved one at the end of their life, and always focusing on the patient's comfort. Hospice really is about comfort care when a curative treatment really is no longer an option. So we're always working to keep the patient comfortable and to honor their decisions and their wishes, which in her case was to stay home and not go to a nursing home. That's one of our very frequent wishes, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have an email from Annie in Galesville, who said her mother passed away a couple months ago in her home, surrounded by her children, and hospice made that possible. Her mom fought cancer for 2 years, and her dream was to die at home. And the kids aren't trained nurses, but the hospice people and the caregivers showed them what to do and encouraged them. And she says, we were able to actually help mom in her last days. We never felt alone, and we could ask any question we had, including, what does death look like?
Absolutely. Those questions are ones that we hear from families often. And, you know, I think many of us are natural caregivers and maybe have never been called to put that to service. But often with a little bit of coaching and teaching and tips from all of the disciplines within our organization, we hope to instill confidence in families so that they can provide care to their loved one right at home.
Nancy in Milwaukee is up next. Let's go to Nancy. Hi, Nance.
Hi. The reason I'm calling in is I'm a hospice nurse, and I was listening to what a previous caller had said about Medicare coverage. I'm sorry, your guest was discussing Medicare coverage, and yes, Medicare and Medicaid does cover 100% of the care. In addition, many insurance companies do, but for those that find themselves with expenses like that, there are companies like VITAS that I work for that do have a charitable foundation that provide full payment of hospice services for those that can't afford it, so that no one has to make that sort of decision as to whether or not they can get the hospice care they need.
Thanks for that call. Burl, a comment?
That is true for most providers of hospice services. For example, Ministry Home Care is part of a Catholic healthcare organization, and we do provide community care services to patients that cannot afford or do not have insurance coverage. Mm-hmm. So there usually always are options in your community, and I would really suggest that no one ever consider the cost as a barrier to receiving hospice care.
Thank you, Nancy. What do you do if where do you go if, let's say, it looks like you're going to, you know, you might have to pay a considerable amount of money? What's the first thing you should do, or the first contact to make?
Well, I think that you can talk to any of the hospice programs to see, you know, what have whatever insurance you do have investigated. I think that's the first thing, and then to learn, you know, what might be the co-pays that go along with that if it's a private insurance, and then also to talk about many organizations, community care, or charitable care programs. The other thing that we help people to do is then to connect to other resources that they may be eligible for within their communities. And that's one of the things that social workers also do on the staff of hospice programs, is try and connect people to those resources to make sure that we can get their needs met at the end of life.
Thanks again, Nancy, for calling. Ann in Stoughton will turn to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to call about my experience. 6 years ago, my husband passed away, and I want to mention two things. First of all, afterward, I participated with several others in a grief support group, and I don't know whether this is done all over the state with hospices, but it was a wonderful experience for me. It so helped me. It just was the beginning of my healing, and I'm sure it was the same for the others in my particular group, because we could just see each other healing as we met weekly for about 2 months. And the other thing I wanted to mention was my husband died 8 months after he was diagnosed. It was already metastasis. And he didn't need a lot of physical care until the last week of his life, and he was hospitalized. But we were told about 3 months previous to his death that there were no treatment options. And although he didn't have any physical needs until the end, looking back, I think we could have benefited from maybe some counseling, maybe talking with a social worker to facilitate our reaching out to family, because we didn't tell anybody until very close to the end. And also, the other thing is our adult daughters live distantly, and I don't think we gave them a fair heads up as to what was happening, because we just didn't know how to do it, and we really didn't want to face the end. So yeah. I was wondering.
Well, Doris Haynes-Stadler, could you comment?
I certainly could, and thank you for bringing those two topics up. First, I'll speak to the grief support. That is a part of all of our hospice programs. We're required by Medicare regulation, actually, to provide bereavement services, and we provide those to surviving family members for at least 13 months after a death. And we try to help people and help families through all those painful firsts, the first Thanksgiving, the first Christmas, the first birthday, the first anniversary of the death. And our programs use a variety of ways to support families through with mailings, phone calls, those support groups that Ann spoke of, and individual meetings with our bereavement counselors or our bereavement volunteers that we use in our program. So we do see this as a transition for families to make, and bereavement support is an important part of any hospice program. I think the other thing that Ann talked about was having services earlier. Just because somebody still is physically capable of getting around, we as a hospice team firmly believe that the longer we have people in our program, the more benefit that we can provide to them. And earlier intervention does allow us time to help families to figure out, how do you tell the people in the community, how do you tell other family members, how do you bring those distant family members in? So earlier referral and earlier admission to program certainly can be a benefit to families.
I just want to say, in our case, you know, it wasn't offered, it wasn't brought up,
mm-hmm.
And we were involved with an oncologist, and I just wonder, do they understand that?
Yeah, the doctors, yeah.
Do they understand that there's more to it than just helping a family give physical care?
Well, we certainly hope that they do. We try and educate the physician community as well as other members of our community about what hospice is and what we can do and when it's appropriate to refer people in.
Yeah, and sometimes it's quite possible, and probably was true in this case, that maybe the doctor just didn't probably may have known, but maybe didn't really understand all the services that were available, especially on the sort of the social side of things. Which is too bad. Burl, comment from you?
I just would agree with the statement that the earlier the patient and the hospice team connect, the more successful we can all be in feeling comfortable as they go through that journey towards the end of their life.
Yeah.
So, referrals can be made to hospice care by anyone. It does not have to come from the physician. So a family member who is concerned, any professional from the healthcare organization, really any source can make a hospice referral and kind of get the ball rolling, at least.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we do have to consult with the physician about the life expectancy and the diagnosis, but that is part of our complete services, to investigate all that and help decide when it would be appropriate for that person to join hospice services.
Yeah. And sometimes, I know in my mother's case, there were, I think, three times, actually, when the doctor thought that, it was time for hospice, and then hospice started, and then she went off hospice and then back on and off and back on again, just because she kind of seemed to improve as from time to time.
Yes, that's something that we all see in hospice programs, especially when we're dealing with some diagnosis such as dementia or adult failure to thrive. People do have a tendency to stabilize, and we don't see a decline, so we may be required to discharge and wait for a readmission time at a later date.
In our case, it was certainly seamless and worked very well, and it was not a problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
Ann, I thank you again for calling. Lee and Cascade will give you a chance now. Hi, Lee.
Hi. My wife died earlier this year, and she was in hospice, and they did a really nice job. Mm-hmm. I was really pleased with the care she got here at home, but she fell. She had a brain tumor, and she fell, and she couldn't get up. So somebody came and put her back in bed, and the next day we had her transported to a nursing home so we could get respite care and get some rest, which was fine. On March 2nd, she was admitted to the nursing home because we felt we couldn't take care of her anymore, because we couldn't help her as much as we thought we could. And on March 2nd, she entered the hospice in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 days after that, she couldn't go to the bathroom, so a catheter was inserted.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, she started bleeding.
Mm.
And we asked the nursing home to call a doctor, They said they didn't have to, but Wisconsin's got a state law that says the doctor doesn't have to see the patient once every 30 days.
Is that true, Burl?
Well, hospice care does follow patients to wherever they reside. So part of what we do in some cases is assist people with that transition that he just described from home care to a facility where they may need further, more intensive professional care. So hospice usually will follow that patient wherever they transition to for their level of care. So that helps us know that person and help them get set up and situated in any new setting.
And Doris, are you advocates sometimes in those kinds of situations?
Sometimes we have to be. Certainly patient safety is one of the areas that we're looking at all the time when we're in any type of home setting to make sure that the situation is as safe for the patient as possible. And there are times where we do make recommendations or a family just decides that they can't do it anymore with changing care needs. So we help patients to transition. And one of the things that the Medicare benefit allows us to do is respite care. And that's a part of the hospice program that's available for us to bring a person into another setting. We either contract with nursing homes or hospitals in our area, and people can come into respite care for any non-medical reason. And that gives us a window of 5 days to look at the situation and to help people transition to the place that they need to be next. The other thing that it does is we use respite care when caregivers are just exhausted and need a little bit of a break. So we can bring people in, provide care in the respite setting, oftentimes with the primary goal of getting them back home once that family is rested again.
Leah, I thank you for calling. And maybe we have time for one more call from Nancy in Grafton. Nancy, hello.
Hello. I was a volunteer for VITAS Hospice Care. And, you know, you get so much more than you give, and it is such an honor to be with somebody as they leave this world and go to the next. And I was a volunteer for a man, and I had to be home by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so he was very critically ill, and when we had prayers, and I left his home, and I came back to my home, and I drove in my driveway at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and Emil died at 3 o'clock. We both got home at the same time.
Mm. Well, that's a story from a volunteer. And again, I guess we should go back to that. Volunteers are critical, very important to hospice, but also it should be said that the volunteers can get a lot out of this as well, Doris.
I think that's absolutely true. I think anyone who works in the hospice field often feels that we get more than we give. It's really a privilege to be able to help care for people at the end of life. And volunteers are just critically important to us. And they do just about anything they're asked. They're really an incredible group of people. Everything from helping with reception in the office or other forms of office work to direct patient service like Nancy spoke of. They're very, very important to every hospice program.
For anyone listening who says, okay, you know what, maybe I should be looking into hospice for my husband, wife, whatever, our child even, what's the first step for that person?
Well, they certainly can contact any of the hospice programs in their area. If they don't know if there are hospice programs in their area, Hope of Wisconsin is an important place to go. They both have a website that you can go to, and they keep a listing of all the hospice programs throughout Wisconsin.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us this month, National Home Health Hospice Month. It's a great time to raise awareness for hospice. And Burl and Doris, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it very much. Beryl Bice is registered nurse and has been a ministry hospice nurse for 5 years. Ministry hospice covers the Wausau-Stevens Point area. And Doris Haynes-Stadler, social worker, has been with ministry hospice for 8 years. Really happy to have both of them on the show. Hospice just does a wonderful job for many, many, many people. I'm glad to have a small part in raising some awareness about the care that you can have through hospice. Coming up, we're going to take a look at quitting smoking, some of the medications, the consulting, the effects of secondhand smoke. Dr. Mike Fiore, director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the UW Medical School. Our guest coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.